We're reading several verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4, 5, and 6 of the 15th chapter of the first canto. And we'll start with the invocation. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're going to read 4, 5, and 6, the translations, and I'm going to focus on the purport in 5 of 5. So remembering Lord Krishna and his well wishes, benefactions, intimate familial relations, and his chariot driving, Arjuna, overwhelmed and breathing very heavily, began to speak. Arjuna said, O King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, who treated me exactly like an intimate friend, has left me alone. Thus my astounding power, which astonished even the demigods, is no longer with me. I have just lost him whose separation for a moment would render all the universes unfavorable and void, like bodies without life. So they're all wonderful verses, and I chose to go deeper in verse 5. Arjuna uvacha vanchito ham maharaja harina bandhurupina yena me pahritam tejo deva vismapanam mahat. Arjuna said, O King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, who treated me exactly like an intimate friend, has left me alone. Thus my astounding power, which astonished even the demigods, is no longer with me. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the Bhagavad Gita 10.41, the Lord says, anyone specifically powerful and opulent in wealth, strength, beauty, knowledge, and all that is materially desirable, is to be considered but a product of an insignificant portion of the complete whole of my energy. No one, therefore, can be independently powerful in any measure without being endowed by the Lord. When the Lord descends to the earth along with his eternal, ever-liberated associates, he not only displays the divine energy possessed by himself, but also empowers his associate devotees with the required energy to execute his mission of incarnation. It is also stated in the Bhagavad Gita 4.5 that the Lord and his eternal associates descend to the earth many times, but the Lord remembers all the different roles of incarnations, whereas the associates, by his supreme will, forget them. Similarly, the Lord takes away with him all his associates when he disappears from the earth. The power and energy which were bestowed upon Arjuna were required for fulfillment of the mission of the Lord. But when his mission was fulfilled, the emergency powers were withdrawn from Arjuna because the astounding powers of Arjuna, which were astonishing even to the denizens of heaven, were no longer required, and they were not meant for going back home back to Godhead. If endowment of powers and withdrawal of powers by the Lord are possible, even for a great devotee like Arjuna, or even the demigods in heaven, then what to speak of the ordinary living beings who are but figs compared to such great souls? The lesson is, therefore, that no one should be puffed up for his powers borrowed from the Lord. The sane man should rather feel obliged to the Lord for such benefactions and must utilize such power for the service of the Lord. Such power can be withdrawn at any time by the Lord, so the best use of such power and opulence is to engage them in the service of the Lord. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Umitamina Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamini Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschata Adhishtarini Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So such a nice verse and purport about Arjuna's powers. That he noticed a shift when Krishna left the planet, that he was no longer as powerful, and his recognition of that coming from Krishna. And so I wanted to focus today on, and this is a really kind of very relevant transition from last discussion on envy, and today focusing on pride and on ego. And they actually, I'll share a little bit about how they connect to envy as well. So what I want to do in today's discussion is I want to talk about kind of the bigger picture of false ego, like that's sort of the backdrop within which pride manifests, and then looking at real ego and how humility is part of that real nature, and then how a little bit about how to get there to transform, how to move from false ego to real ego. So if we think about the soul, like our real selves, we are eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss, radiant beyond measure. We are, we can't be slain, like all those verses in Bhagavad Gita, can't be withered by the wind. Nothing can destroy us. We're very powerful in a sense. We're parts and parcels of Krishna. And then on the other hand, we have the material energy, which is a dull, temporary, constantly changing source of misery. So under normal conditions, this radiant soul, this part of Krishna who's just drawn to Krishna, wouldn't be attracted to that like dull, dark place in the world. I mean, a place without Krishna, right? So it's kind of like a king. Like if you think about an opulent person, like a king or queen, they wouldn't be attracted to go live in a hut under normal circumstances. Like that wouldn't appeal to them if they were materialistic, right? So similarly, the soul doesn't, this world is so foreign to the soul. So what is it that allows us to be here is this covering of the false ego. And it, when, because we're, Prabhupada describes how the jiva is, we're very small, even though we're, you know, these undestroyable souls, we're still very minute. And because of our smallness, we have a tendency to be vulnerable and captured by illusion. So we're kind of, you know, that marginal energy, we tend to be swayed a little more easily than Krishna's other energies, right? As a jiva, we're small, we have that tendency. So in that moment when we chose to turn our face from Krishna, in our, you could say, our vulnerable moment of thinking we're going to enjoy more by turning away, then Krishna's illusory energy, Maya, in the form of so many things, but specifically the false ego, this discussions about the false ego. So wraps over the soul and becomes, I like to think of it almost like some kind of sticky substance, you know, like when you're thinking of, or even like in the Bhagavad Gita, it's described like dust on the soul, right? It's like a dust on the mirror, these anartas, these things. So it can be either like a kind of a grimy, sticky substance on a mirror, you know, like when you have one of those old mirrors that you found at like a thrift store and you're trying to revive it. So that false ego is a barrier between us and Krishna. And it makes us think that everything about me is important. And Sachinanda Maharaj mentioned this story where he told Prabhupada, he asked Prabhupada, one of his, actually his first time with Prabhupada, he asked him a question and he said, Prabhupada, why did Krishna create Maya to keep us here? And Prabhupada said, he got strong. He responded strongly and said, Krishna didn't create Maya, you created Maya. So it was a very, and Sachinanda Maharaj said in that moment, he realized that was his spiritual master because he loved Prabhupada's response, that it's not that we're putting the blame on, oh, Krishna created Maya, but it's like recognition of our own wanting to be in Maya, wanting to, you know, be in this false ego. So I was just reflecting on how, even though we're so, the soul is such an amazing, indestructible substance, you could say, person, Krishna's power of the illusory energy is imagine how strong it is to take something that's indestructible and make it completely covered over and just an illusion, right? So I was just kind of appreciating that Krishna's energies are so powerful. And in this world, we're kind of like the puppets that are, you know, in that painting, that old Bhagavad Gita painting of the three modes with the puppets and those little men, and they think that they're like acting, but they're really just puppets. And so we're kind of like that, thinking that we are so important and that we're the controllers and we're doing everything. So feeling that pride, even though we're just being dictated by so many things, like the, you know, material world, the modes of nature and all that. But this like substance makes us think that we're so special. It's almost like when you have those tinted glasses and you look around and everything is a different color. So when this false ego is there, we look around and we think everything's about me. Like it's kind of this perverted thing. Like even in just like modern psychology, I think there's this kind of discussion around how people think of themselves much more than other people think of them. Like all of us think that other people are much more aware of us than they actually are. And that's coming from this false ego. Like I'm the center. So it's like shifting away from Krishna and making me the center. And so in connecting it to what Bhakti was talking about last week about envy being, she was explaining how it's like grief, the grief that Arjuna is describing here, our real grief of the soul is because we have this Krishna shaped hole in our heart that we're trying to fill in other places. And that envy is like, oh, I'm going to look over there and see something someone has. And that must be what I need to fill that hole. So like, and so similarly with pride, it's like, now that I have that thing. So envy is like looking out and wishing you had something. Pride is like, wow, look at me. I have that thing. So you've basically substituted something material, trying to stick it in that hole and thinking, look how special I am, you know, like trying to, into that Krishna shaped space in our heart. And it never works, but it's like, it's kind of humorous to think that we're so proud about something that's so fleeting and so temporary, you know, like, So Bhaktisiddhanta, actually, he mentioned that fame and adoration is like, is as valuable as the dung of a boar. So, and then we also hear from the other acharyas who talk about, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he has so many songs where he's talking about pride and how he wants to get rid of it, right? And to move through that and get to a place of humility. And when these great acharyas talk about it, it must mean that there's something so much more valuable in humility and not being proud. And I wanted to share this verse from one song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where he says, "Oh mind, why do you want to pose as a sannyasi? The more you put on the external signs of a sannyasi, the more you cheat yourself internally. You are simply decorating your body for the purpose of enhancing your pride." So this I thought was really relevant, not just in the terms of sannyasi, but in anything. Anytime we want to pose as something that we're not, or anytime we take a position that we know is going to get appreciated by others, we're doing it for that purpose of, like, you know, boosting our pride. Then he says here, you're simply decorating your body, but you're cheating yourself internally. So I thought that was really powerful. And then another verse, he says, "When will I consider myself to be a beggar and thus think that there is no one more insignificant than me?" So I was really just reflecting on how these great acharyas are praying for that, being in that mood of like, everyone's greater than me and I'm nothing. So if they are doing that, then what to speak of me? Like, I have nothing to be proud of. If they're showing by their example that pride is like the ultimate detriment to spiritual life, and that, you know, real ego, which is one of humility, is what they're seeking. And they already are, but, you know, they're doing it for our benefit through their songs. So I was also thinking how pride, so in the context of false ego, pride is like very prominent because it's me, mine, I, right? It's all about me. So I was thinking how pride is very lonely. I know this for myself, and maybe others relate to this also, that when I'm feeling proud, it creates sort of a hard-heartedness, almost like a shield over that soft heart of a devotee, right? It's like kind of this, like, look at me, and it's wanting to have others look at me instead of Krishna. So it's very, very isolating, very lonely in the sense that it keeps others away, because nobody likes a proud person, right? They're like, ugh, right? So it just kind of turns people off. And it also makes people envious. Actually, Bhakti and I were talking about this after last week, that when we're, if we're very proud of ourselves and our achievements, and we think it's us and me and mine, then others will become more envious. So in that sense, it keeps others away. And it also keeps Krishna's mercy away. So we're in a very, ironically, we think I'm going to be the center and I'm proud of that, but it's actually keeping others away, and it's keeping Krishna's mercy away, because he thinks, well, you don't need me, so I'm going to stay away. And so I was reflecting on how lonely that is. And Yeah, anyway, we can discuss that more in the group, but we're holding on to, it's just so ironic that in our pride, like, I might be proud of something and I'm holding on to something so fleeting, something that's not even mine. It's like, it could end any time, but I make that such a big deal. And in doing that, I lose all the other things. I lose Krishna's mercy. I lose the good wishes of devotees, because they're like, I don't really want to be around someone who's full of arrogance. So it's really not it's a lose-lose. It's like, you're going to lose what you were proud of anyway, and you've already lost so many things. So it just struck me how important it is to work on pride, because it's really detrimental to our spiritual life. So now, looking at true ego, that identity of ourselves as part of Krishna, and that we're not separate from Krishna. So instead of I, it's Krishna first. Krishna is the center, and we're little revolving parts of him. We're like around him. When he's in the center, then we're happy, right? So that's completely the opposite of what the false ego is, like, me in the center, and okay, I'll fit some spiritual life around the certain side, but like, it's all about me. Even in spiritual life, actually, that's another thing I was going to share, is that I've noticed even in spiritual life, there can be pride of like, oh, I'm so humble, or I'm so, you know, like the, it's very funny, but it can be very subtle. So we think we're like maybe going to a program and like, oh, Krishna's a center, but really I've replaced Krishna with myself. Like, oh, I hope everybody notices how amazing my kirtan is, or my realization that I'm about to share. And it's, so again, it becomes about me, right? So the real ego is about making sure Krishna stays there in the center of our life, like as the center of our journey in this world, and that everything about me is coming from Krishna. So it's on loan from Krishna, and it can't be separated from Krishna. So remembering that I'm not separate from Krishna, and nothing that I have is separate from Krishna. It's all Krishna's mercy. So that's the real ego. And it leads to a place of real peace and contentment, and of a deep humility that's authentic, like a humility knowing that I couldn't be here right now leading this kirtan or giving this talk or whatever service we might have some pride about without the mercy of Krishna and all the devotees and all the people that were in my life who helped me get here and all of that. So when we're in touch with our real self, then humility is a natural part of our real self because we know how Krishna's the whole and we're a tiny part and parcel and we remember that. And it makes it easy to take ourselves out of the center and just kind of relax and go, okay, I don't have to be this like, special all the time. Like I don't always have to be so important and like, you know, rock everybody's world all the time, but I can just remember that a minute part of Krishna, and it's okay for me to just accept that, and I don't have to be something special. So there's a sort of a relief in that as well. And it's different from a lack of self-worth. So I was also thinking about how the real, you know, this real genuine humility, it's because it's not about me, it's about Krishna, then it's a different from, again, we might think we're being humble, but if it's all about me, like, oh, I'm so worth, I'm me, look at me, I'm never going to make it, you know, like that. And it's separate from Krishna again, if it becomes like a material kind of lack of self-worth and obsession about things like that, then again, it's like separating us. So it helps me when I read the songs from the Vaishnavacharyas to get in the mood of genuine humility that's authentic and it's not self-focused. So I was thinking about Bhaktivinoda Thakur's songs and how so often he'll mention pride and his wanting to remove that, right? And wanting to be humble, like the whole Sharanagati is about wanting to deepen humility. And he's not saying, okay, I'm so fallen, therefore I'm going to stop writing these songs and I'm just going to go off and, you know, forget everything and just be lamenting. But he's like still writing these beautiful prayers. He's using his humility to serve Krishna through his poetry and his songs. And he's like actively doing some service, not feeling lack of self-worth and just kind of, you know, moping in that. So it's a really good reminder that humility looks very different when it's connected to Krishna than what I might think it is when it's just a material feeling of, you know, lack of self-worth or something. Yeah. And then in that connection with humility, again, this is something that Bhakti shared with me that I thought was really powerful, that humility actually, we were talking about how to prevent or how to maybe help others not become envious of us. It's kind of tricky because last week we were talking about being envious, what that looks like when we feel it, but what about when others are feeling it towards us? Is there something we can do? And so I had posed that question and Bhakti had shared some thoughts, and one of the things she said is that humility, like when we genuinely feel like everything we have is on loan from Krishna, and that it's a gift and it's not ours, it's not us, then we project that genuine humility, and it makes it easier for people to love us and to not feel envy because they're not threatened by our ego, you know? So, because envy is often like ego and ego, right? Like same with pride. It's like all about the ego. So the false ego. So then in just kind of wrapping this up, like what to do to get to that space of real self, like our real, you could say our real ego. And so if we're thinking of this kind of substance over the soul, like this sticky or dirty substance, these layers over our real self, then we need to find something like a product that will clean it off, right? Something so... like they have those products like Goo Gone and stuff. So So we know like Cheto Dharpana Marjanam, cleansing of the heart, starts with really chanting with attention and sincerity and love, right? The holy name is more powerful than this illusory energy of Krishna. So it's like a real, so here we are as a small soul. We think we're so powerful, but we're completely covered over by this illusory energy with these like tinted lens that we're seeing everything through. But then we're in touch with this amazing form of Krishna and his holy name that's more powerful than the illusory energy. And somehow we've learned about it and we have it in our life. And it's just can really wash away at that false ego when we do it with real genuine calling out to Krishna for help. And also, I don't know if you see behind me is a picture of Balaram on the wall. Balaram is very efficient in removing ego. Like he's one of the demons that he killed is Pralambasura. And Pralambasura, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that he represents ego, honor and prestige, the desire for recognition of feeling. This basically this pride, right? Wanting to feel prestige and honor. And Balaram in one blow killed Pralambasura. And also, if you notice Balaram's pastimes, he tends to kill demons very efficiently with like one blow, or you know, Rukmi, one knock on the head, or the blade of grass with Romaharshana, right? So he took the one blade of grass and touched him. And so Balaram is a really good incarnation of Krishna to pray to when we're struggling with false ego and pride, because he's very efficient in removing that from the heart. And because he's this ultimate supreme spiritual master, we could think of our spiritual masters as representatives, and they remove those, like they remove the cataract from our eyes, that tinting, you could say, of like seeing ourselves as center. They remove that ignorance and they help us in the mood of Lord Balaram, removing the ego, right? So, and then finally, these are just, and there's so many ways, right, to work on our ego, but these are just a few that I thought were central. And one is association of devotees, like we have in this group. I feel like just having really genuine, loving connections with other devotees where we can be ourselves and talk about these difficult things, like sharing. Like last week, I was so touched just to, and I thought, I never really did that before with a group where we actually discussed envy, which is such a delicate subject, you know, like it's very, it goes very deep. And to do that in the association of devotees is so purifying. I could feel like it's like cleansing to do that with devotees that we trust and that we have respect for and that we care for. And actually, there's one more thing that is helpful, and it's when we really try to avoid complacency. So I've noticed in my life that when I get complacent with spiritual life, then my ego really grows. It's almost like, yeah, it's like a plant that keeps trying to grow and grow, but like, we're like, oh, I got to keep keeping it, you know, short. I got to keep cutting at it. But when I'm not attentive, if I'm just complacent, it's like, woo, it shoots up right there. And then immediately again, oh yeah, me, it's all about me again. And so Prabhupada, there was a story where some devotees got robbed, and I don't know the temple, but somebody had climbed through a window and stole something. And Prabhupada told the devotees, yeah, Maya is like that. If you leave even a crack of opportunity where you're not absorbed in Krishna, then she will stick an iron bar in and pry it open. So, and that's why devotee association is so helpful, because it keeps the heart from getting complacent. I think we all know that when we're with others in company of like-minded devotees that really care about us genuinely, then it's harder to be in Maya, because you know, like it's the power of peer pressure, you could say, in a positive way, like wanting to be the best self that you can be in the company of other devotees. So it really helps with that complacency. Yeah, so I think we can wrap it up here. I did have one more. There was a question. Actually, many years ago, I gave a class on this topic at Krishna House, and Kalakanta Prabhu asked a question after, and he said, so should we appreciate devotees, or is that just going to like feed an addict? You know, like our egos, right? Is it just going to feed their ego, like, and like feeding an addict? So, and he was posing it as a question that was very interesting. So we were reflecting on it in that talk, and it's so important to praise devotees and appreciate them, right? That's part of our journey in spiritual life, is to appreciate each other. Like Vaisheshika Prabhu says, encourage the heck out of each other, out of the devotees. But so what we, in that discussion, what we came to is that the conclusion we came to is that it's up to, on our end as the appreciators, we should do that as much as possible, but genuinely, authentically, not just artificial thing that creates a barrier between you and the person. It should be really specific and what you liked, and, you know, like make it real from the heart. And on the end of the receiver, that's where the real work lies. So if we're being praised as a receiver of our abilities or talents or whatever, then it's our, it's a real opportunity to go, okay, this is a chance for me to turn that to Krishna. So again, make Krishna the center. So someone's praising something and then turning that to my spiritual master and all the devotees who have made me who I am. And you know, like that, that mood of gratitude towards those who have helped us do the service. So in that mood, like we can feel grateful to someone for praising us because we're wanting to fan their bhakti. So we can, you know, be courteous and say thank you for appreciating, you know, because we wanna be warm to those devotees who do that, who are offering that gratitude. But then we can, in our mind or verbally, we can offer that to our spiritual masters and Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. So, yeah. Okay, so I don't have any specific questions for discussion, but I do feel like there's different points we could discuss just from some of these ideas about the false ego, the real ego, and how to maybe reduce our pride and get deeper in our humility. So I'm going to turn it back over to Bhakti. Thank you so much.